Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different than we've done in the past. I came across this Gemara, the shiur I was giving, and it's one of those agadotas where, you know, you learn, and you say, you kind of scratch your head, and you say, I don't know what that's all about, and then you just keep on going. It's one of those stories that it's just very hard to kind of make sense out of. It has this fantastical quality to it, so you learn it through, and you keep on going, not knowing what to do with it. So it's a little different than the usual agadotas we do, but it has this sort of fantastical quality, and I wanted to see if we could figure out a way, a method of interpreting these agadotas. Very, very interesting story. It's quite long, which is another reason why it's different from what we usually do. So you'll let me know if this thing, this procedure works for you. I'm going to divide this limud into two sessions. Today we'll just do the Gemara, kind of just read through the Gemara and learn the story. And the reason I say that is you really can't understand, try to get a theory or account of the Agada until you see the whole thing. And it's quite long. So if I were to both read the whole thing and analyze it, you'd be here all morning Seder, which is obviously not what we need to be doing. So I'm going to divide this into two. If you let me know if you're okay with this. Today we'll just learn the Gemara, just to get the push-up shot. And then next time we'll come back and try to figure it out. I'll probably look at two different approaches to this Agadata. One would be the Maral, just mention his approach briefly, and then my own approach of the Agadata. And you'll let me know what you think. Does that procedure sound okay to you? Okay, so the Gemara here, I didn't mark it off. I forgot to when I Xeroxed it. But it starts from my Vyish. We'll start from, you see that little 10? It's about over here. Little superscript 10, Vayishbi Benov. It's a long story about David HaMelech and his encounter with Yishbi Benov. Yishbi Benov was a giant, and he was one of the sons of Harpah, a brother of Goliath. And Goliath, as you know, was a nemesis of David. David killed him. A great feat of military and slingshot skill. Kill this giant. So that didn't go over well with Goliath's family. So what we have here is kind of a story of David's encounter, in many ways remarkable, with this giant, Yishbi Benov. So the pasuk reads, V'yishbi Benov asher b'yelidei harpa. Everybody with me? Yishbi Benov was one of the children of Harpah. Harpah is another name for Arpah. Does that sound familiar to you? Who was Arpah? Yes, right. She was sister-in-law of Rus, right? One of the interesting questions this Agadata raises, which I want to get to in the analysis part next time, is who was Arpah? Who was Harpah? You'll see she plays a significant role in the story. Is she a wonderful lady? A terrible lady? Like, what do we know about her?
Well, it's really bad after she left, right?
Excuse me?
After she, like,
yes, Agadic tradition that after she left, she kind of took an awful turn for the worse. This is Agadic as a partial manifestation of that. We're going to look at that in the context of our analysis. But in any case, so the pasuk is identifying, this pasuk in Shmuel Beis, identifying Yishbi Benov, Umishkal Kino, and the weight of his, they're different mepharshim have different ways of understanding the word Kino. Could be a big, heavy metal hat that they wore in when they fought. You know what it's called? I don't know what it's called, but it probably has a name. Some big metal protective hat that soldiers wore. Others say it's a weapon that he had. It was Shalosh Meyosh Mishkal Nechoshes. It was massive, 300 Mishkal Nechoshes. So he was one big dude with this massive metal hat on his head, or this massive weapon that he carried, which is a sign of his remarkable size and physical prowess and strength. V'hu chagur chadasha, and he's newly armed. So this, there's a big, massive soldier ready for war, ready to murder, ready to kill. That's a pretty fearsome image of him. But Yomar Lahako says David, and he said, I'm going to kill David. Okay, so the Pasuk itself telegraphs an encounter between David and this giant Yishbi Benov. This Agadah elaborates very, very extensively on that basic datum. So, my v'yishbi benov, the Gemara, Stama de Gemara asks, who is this Yishbi Benov? Amar Rav Yehuda, why is he called that name? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ish Sheba al Iske Nov. He was a man who came over the doings related to Nov. Who remembers what or who Nov Ir HaKohanim was? Does that ring any bells? Any Tanakhic bells? Yes?
Shaul killed them all?
Yes. Why did Shaul kill them all?
Because they gave like a sword and food to David.
Correct. David took refuge when Shaul was pursuing him relentlessly. He took refuge in Ir in the city Nov, which is the city of Kohanim. Shaul heard about it. Was not a happy camper and massacred the entire city. So the question is, what is David's culpability for Shaul's massacre? Did he do the right thing by taking refuge in his city, knowing that Shaul might have found out about it and taken massive revenge and killed the city, which is what he did? So was David not putting that city at risk? It's a little bit like, let's say, somebody, you know, who's escaping an enemy, and they take refuge in some innocent citizen's house, and then the pursuers come and they bomb the house. Let's say, like with Israel and the Palestinians. So let's say something, you know, there's a terrorist, like this guy who was just killed, in the house. Well, let's say somebody innocent happened to have been there. So what is the culpability of somebody who was engaged in maybe legitimate efforts if somebody else is incidentally killed? That's really the question the Gemara is raising, which happens to be a really interesting and important moral and halacha question. Like, to what extent was David culpable? Should he have gone into the city of Nov and taken refuge, knowing the risks he was putting that city in? And so the Gemara really takes him to tasks for that. This is, of course, a medrash on the Yishbi Benov, you know, on Iske Nov. But here's what the Gemara says. How long will this sin be hidden in your hands? Because you took refuge there, that city was slaughtered. Who told, as Rashi explains, who told Lashon Hara on David, which resulted in Shaul being jealous of him. So that didn't bode well for Doeg. And as a result of what Shaul did in wiping out the city, he was eventually killed. So David, your attempt to escape and take refuge in a city had awful consequences for many, 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 many people. And therefore you bear some burden of responsibility. So what should David have done, really? Should he not have gone into the city? Should he have tried to hide somewhere else? That's what the Gemara seems to be suggesting. Don't go to Nov. Go to some other. Don't go to a city. You know, go hang out in a cave. Or, you know, hide somewhere. So there's culpability here. The Gemara attributes to David. So the Hashem, we could analyze. This is a very interesting moral dilemma, by the way, and we could analyze it, but it would take me away from what are the real themes of the Agadah that I want to focus on. So you can just think about this and think about the issue of moral culpability here. But this is really a prelude into the story that's told. We could think about to what extent this prelude is relevant to the actual Agadah, and it probably is, as we'll see, but it's a prelude. Okay, so Hashem gives David a really awful choice. He says, "Ritzonecha yichlu zaracha, o timaser biyad oye." I am giving you a choice. Either I will hand you over to enemies, presumably resulting in your death, or I will see to it that none of your descendants live. How's that for a choice? Not a choice anybody would want to have, right? So what do you think David would say? If you were David, well, none of us is David. You can do some texts over there. Oh, here's another one here. If you were David, I mean, obviously, this is an awful place to be. What would you expect David to say? I mean, not yourself. What would you expect David to say? What would you expect him to say? What? I can't hear you. Yes, right. That's what that's what you would expect. A person would say, look, I want my kids to live. I want my descendants to live. I'm willing to sacrifice my life to ensure that my descendants can survive. That is what you would expect, right? That's what David does. Although, as we'll see, it gets him into a lot of trouble and he eventually reverses himself. And we need to understand the reversal because, as Yehuda correctly says, most people, I think, would say, look, I'll sacrifice my life for my descendants, my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids. So you would think. And that's really the way David starts, but it's not the way he ends. So let's continue. Amar lefan Ribono shel Olam, mutav emsar biyad oye, velo yichle zari. Ribono shel Olam, I choose death, personal death, over the destruction of my descendants. Okay, that's the background. Now the story unfolds. This is the heart of the Haggadah time. It's a very interesting story. It's quite long and very involved. And as you'll see, the more we get into it, the more we'll see, like, what is going on here? But here's how the story goes. Yom Achad Nafak Liskar Bazai. One day, he went out to spread a net to trap animals. Now, why do you think David did this? I mean, he probably had food. He was a king. You know, he probably had food. So why do you think he did this? What?
Hobby.
What?
Hobby.
Hobby, yeah. It was probably a diversion. You know, the weights of rulership, tough job, need a break. Somebody might play Game Boy or whatever, you know, these games. So he was obviously David HaMelech, so he hunted. He was a soldier, remember? He was a military man, and he was very talented in many things, including, obviously, his Ruchnius and his Kedusha, but he was also a very talented warrior, as Nach makes clear. So for him, it was probably relaxing just to go hunting, you know, trap animals. Not something that any of us would do, but I don't think any of us are soldiers. Anybody here a soldier? Okay. So that's what he did.
Well, didn't the note be who thought they didn't go hunting?
Yeah, true. Well, first of all, he went to trap animals. He probably could use them. If you trap them, you could shech them. Right. But you'll see that he actually shot arrows, too. But I guess David HaMelech didn't know about the Nodi Yehuda's position. Not surprisingly, since it happened a long time later. And different world. In the Nodi Yehuda's time, hunting was really an awful thing to do. In David HaMelech's time, it was quite normal. That's what everybody did. Okay. So, Asa Satan, the Satan came, Va'adame le Kitavya, and it took up the form of a deer. So this is the first fantastical element in this. I got it. The Satan appears in animal guise. It's not the only place in Shas and in Tanakh that this happens, but this is first step. Pasak begira velo matye. David shot an arrow at him, but it didn't reach him. Mashche, so the deer kept on running, and David HaMelech, on the hunt, kept on pursuing the deer. Ad amtye li eretz plishtim. So David HaMelech lost himself in the hunt, and he ended up in enemy territory. Not a good idea. David HaMelech is all by himself. He's lacking his soldiers, his retinue. He's like, you know, personal relaxation, get away from it all, hunt. And he ends up in enemy territory, which is, of course, what the Satan devised. It's really interesting to me that David was so captivated by the pursuit that he kind of lost track of space and time. Yes.
Also, like in the Bacchetta story, didn't the Sultan appear to him like a bird or something like that? Tried to shoot an arrow at it and then reveal the Bacchetta?
I don't remember that, but it's probably true if you say it. It would be very similar.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. If you could find that Gemara, I would appreciate it because I'd like to compare the two. So thank you for that, Grant. In any case, just as an aside, it reminds me of something happened to me. I may have mentioned this to you, I don't remember, but I was, one period in my life, I worked right near a massive, doesn't exist anymore, but a massive Barnes & Noble used bookstore. So Friday, I got out from, finished what I was doing, and I went into the store. And I got totally absorbed in going around this bookstore. Oh, what a great book. That's a great book. And that's a great book, you know. And I lost total track of time. It's used, so they were all cheap. I mean, it wasn't like full price books. It was like Erev Shabbos. All of a sudden I woke up. And, oh, my goodness. It was like really close to Shabbos. And I lived in Far Rockaway at the time. This was shortly after I got married. This was double fare, and you had to, you took the subway. In order to get out of the subway, you had to pay to get out. You know, this was the days of the coins you used. So I ended up arriving after Shabbos started. My wife was like frantic. Of course, there were no cell phones in those days. So like I was just newly married, more or less. So I ended up, there I was in the subway. It was already Shabbos, and I had my wallet and my briefcase. And so I gave some money to some guy in the train and said, the coin, could you get me out of the subway? And then I found a policeman. I saw him walk by. I said, could you get this over to my wife? So, of course, my wife, Shabbos, I'm nowhere to be found. And there's a policeman knocking at the door, which probably didn't bode too well from her perspective. And it's the last time I ever went to a bookstore or Shabbos that I can remember, certainly by myself. So, I tell the story, it's actually just show you how foolish we can be and how you can get so absorbed in what you're doing. And I assume that David HaMelech, this is just like so absorbed in what he was doing, really kind of lost track of where he was. So I can hear that from my own personal experiences. Anyway, so Kedachaziyeh Yishbe Benov, we're in the third line from where the lines get wide. Kedachaziyeh Yishbe Benov, when Yishbe Benov saw him, Amari said, "Hainu hai de katle legalius achi. He's the guy who killed my brother. Time for revenge." Kafte, so he ties him up. Kamte, he shoves him under an olive press. Osve, and he sits on him. Vishajye tuse be budget. And ties him up. Stoops him under an olive press, and here this like 400-pound giant now goes sits on him. Not a good place to be for David. However, this is David. It's not you or I. Isavid le nisa, a miracle was done. Macha le ara mituse, and the earth underneath the olive press, two different perushim on this. One is that it got soft, or another one is that it got indented, and so it crushed down, but because it softened under him, he was able to squish down, and he survived. Okay? Interesting. I mean, why? We could ask. I mean, Yishbi Benov had many methods of killing him. Why did he choose this one? That's a fair question, right? So again, when we come back to the Gemara, next time we meet, we're going to try to answer all these questions and analyze this, but now we're just sort of getting the story, and you can see that, why does the Sultan do this? And, why is he making himself into a deer? What's the significance of a deer? Why does David lose himself? Why does he get crushed under this olive press? Why not? Why all these elements of... That's why I say it has this, fantastical quality. But I mean, as you, those of you who've been going to my shiurim, and Eliezer, others have for quite a while, Grant, you know that, I mean, every single word in the Gemara is precious, it's meaningful, just like you learn any sugi in Shas, everything in the Gemara here is meaningful. It's not by accident. And it's our job to try to figure out what the Gemara is teaching us, but it's there. It's important. These are Kedoshim who wrote the Gemara, and we need to try to get to the bottom of it. So why that method of trying to kill him, which of course in the event failed. Let's continue. Gemara cites a pasuk from Tehillim. Heiner diksiv, tarkiv tsaadi tachtai, my steps widen under me, velo ma'adu karsulai, and my legs did not shake or did not become infirm. Is that pasuk a good riot to what happened in the case of Yishbi Benov? Doesn't seem to knock down evidence. So why does the Gemara, I mean, in general, usually psukim are, by the way, more apt than this one, but that's the way the Gemara darshans, you know, it's not pshat, it's like a drush is, you know, kind of, it enlarges our scope of the way we look at things. Pshat remed drush sod. This is an enlarging way of looking at the pasuk. It's not really a raya. Okay, now the story shifts scenes. We move now from David to the back to Yerushalayim. Ahu Yoma, that day, Apanya Demalei Shabta. It was Erev Shabbos. This, by the way, is why, partially why it reminds me of my own episode in Barnes & Noble. This is like also Erev Shabbos. Hav Avishai ben Sruya, hav Kachayif Reshe. Avishai ben Sruya, who was one of David's leading military men and also his nephew, was washing his head, hair, Bedalad garbe demaya, with four sa'im of water, lots of water. Okay, that's interesting. Some of Farshim derive from here the chiv of washing your hair, Erev Shabbos. But in any case, like, why is this, again, same question, like, why wasn't he, like, I don't know, cooking cholent, or why wasn't he going to the dry cleaners, or whatever? Like, what's the significance of, right? It's all fair question. Like, why was he happen to be doing this? Chazinu kasme dama. He saw blood stains as he was washing his hair. Ika da amre. Some say, asa yona. A yona came. Itrif kame and started wildly fluttering and, you know, shaking its wings and banging right next to him. So something odd happened when he was washing his hair. Either he saw blood, according to one Lashon in the Gemara, or this Yona came and started, like, making a fuss right in front of him. Amar, he said, Knesses Yisrael li Yona imsala. Knesses Yisrael is compared to a Yona. Sheneamar kanfe Yona nechba bekesef. The wings of Yona are covered, of the Yona bird are covered in silver. Shmamina David Malka di Yisrael Bitsara Shari. Must be that David is in trouble. What's the chain of reasoning here? If you saw a Yona fluttering next to you, would you necessarily think the king of Israel is in trouble? Not necessarily. So it seems a little bit far-fetched. I mean, just how peep shot. But this is what triggers a whole search on Avishai's part towards him. One kasha I have on the Gemara, which I have not really seen a good answer to, is how does that fit in with the first lashon of the Gemara, kasme dama? It's like totally separate. I mean, at least the Gemara, well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe he saw blood, so he thought that David and Melech was in trouble. And the Yona, the Gemara has to explain the symbolism of the Yona. It doesn't actually have to explain the symbolism of the blood, so maybe that's the explanation. But in any case, he sensed that something was awry or amiss. And I think, again, we need to ask ourselves, what's the Yona? What's the fluttering of the bird? Why is that how Avishai discovered that David was in trouble? Which, by the way, is, again, somewhat far-fetched. In other words, it's not like necessarily the case that you would think that. So, again, this is the Agadita, and this is the story, and so this is part of the fantastical quality of it, I think, which requires, you know, tzarachian. Okay, let's continue. Asa lebeise, v'lo ashkeche. So he went to where David lives, the palace that he lived in, but he couldn't find him. So now Avishai becomes a posek. He takes up the following question. Tanan, ein rochvin al suso v'ein yoshvin al kiso, v'ein mishtamshin b'sharvito You're not allowed to ride on the king's horse, sit on his throne, or use his scepter. B'shas sakana mai. Am I allowed to use David's, as we'll see, his mule, to ride on b'shas sakana? Apparently, I did a little research on this when I learned this Gemara. Apparently, in ancient times, it was a sign of royalty to use a mule. You'd think like a horse, right? You know, big, handsome, fast horse. But for reasons not totally clear to me, mules at this time in the ancient world were the preferred mode of transportation. Mules are very, very... they're strong physically. They have the kinds of hooves that grip better than horses do. They have more endurance. They can go longer distances, I get. I mean, it's not a very impressive creature if you look at a mule. But so he wanted to use David HaMelech's mule. Oh, why didn't he have his own horse, his own mule? Like, why is he going? What does he need David's for? A good question, no? So there is a pshat answer to that doesn't require, I think, any deep, and I think I saw one of the Mefarshim say this, that he didn't know where David was. But it could be that David's favorite beast would smell, would know him, would be able to track him down. You know, dogs can do that too. You know, it's that sometimes when the police are looking for somebody who's lost in the woods, they will give the dog some of the lost person's clothing to smell. And the dog picks up the smell, and then he starts searching around to try to find that smell, because dogs have a very, very acute sense of smell. So it could be that either he felt the mule, David's personal mule, would smell him, or he knew his habits, he knew where he took him to go out, to go away. Whatever it was, he felt he had a more likely chance of finding him with David's mule than with his own transportation.
I think other things also, aside from the mule.
Excuse me?
I think other things other than the mule, you know.
He didn't take anything else.
He's nothing
to... No, he said that's a Mishnah. It's as if Avishai knew the Mishnah. Mishnah was written way after Avishai. But it could be there was this long Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh goes back a long time. Could be the Gemara kind of assumed that this is something that he would know. And it is kind of probably true cross-culturally that people don't use the stuff of a king. It's disrespectful. Right, you'll go sit on the throne of the king, and it'll be very, you know, off with the head if you wanted to do that. So it's kind of common sense. The Mishnah incorporates that as a Kavod HaMelech. It's a chiv of Kavod HaMelech. But, you know, it's not surprising that the Gemara expected Avishai to know that. So he has a shaila, b'shasa sakana mai. Is there a heter of shasa sakana? Right? Is that a heter? Asa Shaul Bei Midrasha, he went into the Beis Medrash, wanted to speak to the local posek, picked up the phone and called up David Cohn, you know, and asked his shaila from his rav. Went to the Beis Medrash, Amrulei, v'shas ha-sakana shapar dami. You're allowed to. V'shas ha-sakana is mutter. What's the question? What's the shaila? Why is this a shaila? And pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to what? Yeah, mechalal Shabbos, you know, you're allowed to, so... If it's Bikuach Nefesh, like, what's the Shaila? No? Why did he have a question about it? Like, why did he need to go... What's that? So, Safi Bikuach Nefesh. What's the halach of Safi Bikuach Nefesh in Shabbos? Also, give him a challah Shabbos. In other words, if there's some chance that somebody's going to die, then, like Yom Kippur, Safek Pikuach Nefesh, you eat on Yom Kippur. You know, Safek Sakan, Safek, you know, if you're not sure if it... So, I mean, it's a good hafmalachic perspective, and Ramesh Feinstein, I saw this brought down in Yalkut Biurim, where I saw this, I would not have known. Ramesh Feinstein is Chuvis and Choshen Mishpat addresses this, and he says that there's a shaila if being allowed to be mechal Shabbos, say, or use the king's stuff for pikuach nefesh is hutra or hutcha. You know what the difference is? What's the difference between hutra and hutra? It's a classic lamdusha kira. What's the difference?
One is whether like now it's completely mutter and you can do whatever you want. The other is that it's still like you're still not supposed to do it, but now we're allowing you to, and therefore you should minimize it.
Right. Where there is, where, let's say, berpikuach nefesh, is it the case, let's say, machal Shabbos, is there no isser of Shabbos? Like Shabbos, the Shabbos disappears in Bikuach Nefesh. It's Hutra, it's Mutter. There's no Isser at all. Or is it Dechuya, which means to say that the Isser of Shabbos obtains, except that it is trumped by the Chiyuv of Bikuach Nefesh. But it's not like it's no longer Shabbos. Still Shabbos, still Isser. Except that it's like Asay Docholos Asay. The same question arises with Asay Docholos Asay. Is it Los Hasei Hutcha or Hutcha or Hutcha, the same issue? Is it disappear? Or is it there, just overridden? And so Ramesh says the difference is whether you're allowed to rely on Nisim. If it's, what he was wondering is if it's only Dechuya, then maybe you can't rely on Nisim, because it's only Dechuya. It's Hutcha, then of course you can rely on Nisim. That's Ramesh's answer. I know it seems a little, maybe the best we could do, seems a little far-fetched. That's why I think we need a much broader macro lens to analyze this Agadata, not the narrow shot lens, because there's so many fantastical elements of this story that I think this halachic shaila is a part of that larger macro question of like, what is this Agadata doing? What is it about? Which is what, again, I want to try to take up, Ritz Hashem, next time we meet. In any case, let's continue. I know you have to go to morning Seder. Let's see if we can finish the Gemara. Rachve Leparde, he rode his mule, Vakam, Vazal, he got up and he went, Kaftzale Ara, and he had Kvitzas Haderach, which is, by the way, why the Gemara brings it up, it's all sugya about Kvitzas Haderach, Behadi de Kab Maske, while he's going and chasing and finding David, Chazyali Arpa Ime. So he came across Arpa, i.e., or a.k.a. Harpa, same person, Dahavas Navla, she was weaving. Ki Chazise, when she saw him, Pasakta Lepilcha, Shadete Eluya, Savra Lemigdale. She took the spindle that she was weaving with, which is a big kind of wooden thing, and she threw it, she broke it, and she threw it at Avishai, hoping to kill him. Here you have this, it's just an odd image, also part of the fantastical quality of Agada. Avishai was no little wimp. I mean, he was a big, tough soldier. So you have this like elderly lady sitting there knitting, you know, and then she thinks, oh, well, I'll kill him by throwing the spindle at him. It's almost a little comical, isn't it? Just the image is kind of comical, isn't it? It's also part of the, whoa, that's, well, why does she appear, and what's she about, and what's she doing here? All part of the same effort, challenge in understanding this Agadata. In any case, so she tries to kill him. Amrele, she says to him, it didn't work. She didn't kill him. Amrele, she says to him, Alam, young man, I see li palach. Give it to me. Pus, she asked him for it, like to make believe she didn't do anything wrong, like she didn't drag him. She just says, oh, it fell, broke, could you give it to me? So, paske beresh mocha v'kotla. So he immediately smashed her on the head with it and killed her. Yeah, she's an enemy. She tried to kill him. He's not obviously not on the Jews' side, and so he actually killed her. We'll see, by the way, this is significant at the very end of the story. Karchazye Yishbi Benov. When Yishbi Benov now saw Avishai approaching, he said, Omar, he said, Hashtahava Bay Train, Vakutlinli. Now there are two people after me, not just David, but Avishai, they're going to kill me. Paske David Leila. So this big giant picks David up and heaves him into the air. Vidatzle Lerumche. And he sticks his sword in the ground with a sharp part of the sword pointing upwards, so when David falls down, he lands on the sword. Amar, Napal Alav Anikta, let him fall on it and die. why did he do this? Why did he just stab him with a sword? Another question, right? It's quite a striking image. But it gets even more interesting. Amar Avishai Shem. Avishai said the Shem HaMeforesh, this full name of Hashem. Ukmei David ben Shmaya La'ara. And David now is stuck in the sky. So there he is, like hovering in the sky, hung over the sword that is sticking up, waiting for him to land on it. So now, this is so classic Gemara. The Gemara, now, a little sidebar. The stump of the Gemara asks the question, V'neba le'ihu? Why didn't David say the Shem HaMeforesh? Like, only Avishai can do it? What about Uncle David? He's a greater Kadosh than Avishai. Why didn't he do it? So the answer is, Ein chavash motzi atzmei beis asur. Somebody who's in prison can't get himself out of prison. You need a third party to get him out. Why is that? Probably because somebody who is in prison is too nervous, too agitated, and can't think clearly enough to do the right thing. Some of the Farshim say that. It makes a lot of sense to me. In any case, so now we have a conversation, as if this doesn't get almost more farcical. We have a conversation between David and Avishai. David is hanging there in the air over his sword, and Avishai says, "My bayasacha, what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing here?" Okay, Amalei, Hachi Amarli Kutchabricho, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me a choice between self-destruction or the destruction of my descendants. V'hachi Yahadrule, and this is what I told him, that I would rather see myself killed than my descendants killed. Amale apech tzlusech. Go reverse your tefillah. Barbara kira lisbun v'yatlo tzar. Let your kids sell wood. You shouldn't suffer. In other words, Avishai counsels him to reverse his tefillah, and now his descendants will all die and you'll survive. Which seems a little selfish, and as we said at the very beginning, as Yehuda said, like the natural thing would be the David to do what he said he would do, which is to allow himself to be killed. Now Avishai is advising him to see to the end of his descendants, and he will die. Amalei hachi sayei abadan, help me. Avishai daven together with David, and Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Shazro b'tefila, he helped with tefila. Amar Avishai Shem, Avishai said a shame on the forest, v'achte, and he released him, and he was saved from the sword. Okay, now that David is willing to see all of his descendants die as long as he can survive, say, that's one kasha, like, why would he allow that? Why would Avishai advise that? Okay, have a karadach basrayu. So now, Yishbi Benov is chasing after the two of them. Yes?
He has like a worse method.
Yeah, Yishbi Benov.
Twice already.
Yeah, right, yeah. Really? Right, good. Yeah, right.
What does a kira lisbon
mean? It's better for your bar barach kira lisbon. Let your kids, you know, be destitute and come to selling wood.
Isn't it that his kids are going to be killed, not that they're just going to be killed?
This is an aphorism, a folk aphorism.
Oh, that's what it means.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's something that people would say. It's better for you. You take care of yourself. Let your kids take care of themselves. He cited this aphorism, which was extant out there, to, you know, to justify his position. Okay. So now Yishbi Benov is now chasing after them, and there's this like pursuit. It's like, you know, you can imagine a movie where, like, you know, a car chasing another car, so you have just this giant chasing after David and Avishai, very dramatic.
2 minutes ago.
Yeah, but then I guess they got frightened, or he scared them, and he started chasing. And they were afraid. They ran away from him. Kimata Kube, when they got to the city of Kube, which is a city on the way to Eretz Yisrael, Amre there said, Kumbe, let's try to fight him. But they chickened out. They kept on running. Kimata Beitre, when they got to the city called Beitre, Amre they said, Betray Gurion. Katluha la'aryeh, two young cubs, namely themselves, can kill the ferocious lion. Amrle, and they said to him, Zil ishtakach li'arpa imech b'kivra. go find Orpah, your mother, in the grave. Ki ad karu le shma de ime, when they mention the name of his mother, kachash chele, he lost his strength, v'katle, and they killed him. It's a little reminiscent of Shimshon losing the hair, and he lost power. So as soon as Yishbi Benov heard that his mother was in the grave, somehow it so disturbed him, he was so emotionally distraught, that he lost the ability to fight aggressively, effectively, which one could understand, but it's still interesting that that's the case, and they killed him. Don't go out in war, don't risk yourself in life, don't risk your life, and that ends the story. So, as you can see, it's really, I think it's very interesting, and it just keeps on begging us to ask, like, what is this all about? Why does David have this experience? Why the olive press and the, you know, floating in the middle of the air over the sword? And is there something here that, again, the Kedoshim who wrote this Gemara, is there something here that they want to teach us about David? Maybe about life in general from which we can learn? Because remember, ultimately, the Gemara teaches us. It's written to teach us how to lead our lives halachically, but also how to think and understand things and how to conduct ourselves in Musar and Midos properly as well. So is there some message that this Gemara is trying to convey in the remarkable story that's told? Grant?
Also, the name of this city seems too convenient.
Yeah, right. Could be there were such cities, but and on that basis they darshaned it. I don't really know, but yes, they are very convenient. That's correct. Any other comments about this? Okay, so we'll pick up next time.
The defense of was not only killed Golgath, the defense of Orpah, but killed
his brother, Yishbi Benov.
And not only Yishbi, but Orpah himself.
And Avishai killed Orpah, correct. So what's this animosity between the two of them? Like, there's a lot of questions here. And so next time we get together, I'm not sure exactly when that will be, hopefully as soon as possible, it's got to be on a Tuesday, we'll go back, I will review for you to summarize the Agadah and then try to look at some analyses. Thank you all. And I finished, we're almost done, time for a second.